This is the radio show that cares about the most important part of your life, and that's your health. We've got an interesting show. We're going to have the same guests throughout the show. The first part of our show, we're going to talk about affordable housing and how to get it and why we don't have it. And then the second part, we'll talk about Palestine, or as I call it, Israel. And we'll be talking with, and I hope I pronounce his name correctly, Peter G. DeCrassel. Is that close?
It's very close. It's perfect.
All right, great. I like that. Peter is an attorney. He lives in Hong Kong half the time and in Prescott, Arizona, the other part. And I think you're visiting Los Angeles right now, if I'm not mistaken.
I was there, and I'm going to be back there tomorrow. I'm back in Prescott at the moment.
Ah,
so it's a very easy flight back and forth. It's a 55-minute flight from Prescott to L.A., and I can get to a meeting on the west side in L.A. quicker from Prescott than some people like yourself in Thousand Oaks.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In fact, if I have meetings with our mutual friend, Devin Blaine, I'll tell her I'll be there at, say, 10, but I could be there at 10:45. Not my fault, right? But that's why I moved to Thousand Oaks a number of years ago. All right, let's talk about housing and affordability. Prescott, Arizona, we'll start with Prescott. It's become a mecca. You live in Hong Kong. Hong Kong is one of the most expensive places to live in the world. Japan is expensive. New York City, I understand, rent for a small place is now up to close to $5,000 a month. Chicago
Correct.
Is expensive. L.A. is expensive. And frankly, so is Thousand Oaks expensive. You can go out to smaller cities in Ventura County, where I live, and get reasonable rents, or if you want to buy. But it's out of sight, generally, isn't it?
It is everywhere. It's a global crisis.
Why?
Well, I think... Let's focus on the U.S. because the why varies from country to country based on the political system, zoning laws. But in the U.S., let's start with, for example, renters. Every government agency that governs housing is basically government run. Whether it's at the federal, state, county, or city level. And that's why you have a crisis, because you basically have government bureaucrats running a housing agency, and they know nothing about the commercial market. So what I am proposing is it's time to make housing a partnership between the public and private sector. And the idea is that the private sector puts forth a CEO of the housing agency that is a banker with real estate knowledge or a real estate executive, and the government agency put up the equivalent of the chief operating officer, who then executes on the decisions made by the joint partnership, which is the structure I have proposed, is in my book, Custom Made Housing.
And that's spelled M-A-I-D, Made Housing, Custom
Correct.
Made. Right.
Correct. And I have set up in Arizona 501c3 called Breaking Housing Matters, which is advocating how you go about implementing and executing my proposed solution to the housing crisis on the renter side. and also on the buyer side, because my proposal is based on the foundation that nobody, not a buyer, not a renter, should have to pay more than 25% of their income for housing, whether it's for rent or a mortgage. And then you look at how you get people to qualify for the other 75%. Today, even families with two-job incomes cannot qualify for a mortgage, A, because of the price, and two, because they have to deliver a guarantor, ideally a parent or relative, that has a net worth that is acceptable to the mortgage company. So on the private sector, you've got the pressure of investment funds buying real estate, cheap real estate in places like Thousand Oaks or Ventura County, because it's a lot cheaper than LA City, Beverly Hills, or New York, but then they've got to make a reasonable return on their investment. So they have to increase the rents in order to get the return they promised their investors.
And that is the same time out here in Thousand Oaks, in Ventura County, people say, and I'm going to use easy numbers, they'll put a house on the market for, say, well, $1 million, okay? And it's a modest home, maybe 2,000 square feet, 1,800 square feet. And then there'll be a bidding war, and people will say, well, I know you want $1 million, but we'll give you 1,200,000. And then somebody else will say, well, we'll up that to 300,000. So they bid over, and that's on a buying situation. On a renting situation, I know that there was a single bedroom apartment, and it was $2,100 a month. I would never pay that much for that. I'd rather live on a tent, because it just wasn't, you know, it wasn't worth it, at least to me.
Right. Well, I understand that, and that is because of the supply and demand. Because it is so expensive to build today, because of financing and to qualify for mortgages, the number of homes being built is dramatically less, which pushes up the prices of existing homes. So it's because of the shortage or lack thereof of housing that people wind up overbidding because of the limited supply. And the end result is more and more people get excluded and become housing insecure.
But the same thing happens with rent. While they don't bid, if somebody wants $2,000 a month for rental in an apartment, they don't, a year and a half ago, that same apartment might have rented for $1,500 a month.
Correct. That's the example I gave you where that apartment may have very well have been flipped or sold from one partnership to another. They now have to increase the return to their investors for the higher price they paid for the building. And the end result is the only way they get that reasonable return or unreasonable return for their investors is by increasing the rent, which is why under my proposal, I'm opposed to rent control.
I'm just going to ask about that.
I have a whole chapter dedicated to the history of rent control failures going back to the Roman times in Jerusalem. So rent control has never worked, never will work, which is why I devoted a whole chapter. But what is important to remember is that, yes, a landlord and a developer is entitled to, or they are entitled to, a reasonable return on their investment. Now, what is reasonable in Thousand Oaks may not be reasonable in L.A., and is definitely not reasonable in a Jackson, Mississippi. So part of what I am proposing is in the overall, what I call the housing subsidy solution, is that part of the ordinance defines what is a reasonable return locally in terms of based on CPIs and all the other measurements that the government has out there in terms of what is a reasonable return. So that
Hold on 1 second. A reasonable return, as you know, I'm assuming that you're a capitalist.
Correct.
Okay.
So a compassionate capitalist.
Got it. That's, you know, so if you put $100 into the Mark Allen Fund, which, by the way, I do accept money like that. you put $100 in a year, you're going to want, say, $125, and that's not including interest and all that, as a return on your investment. But maybe you could get $150 or even $175. How do you determine? Who determines what is reasonable?
The partnership that I mentioned. That's why I said it. The only way things can work on the housing front moving forward is making it a partnership between the public and private sector. And the way I break down the housing subsidy solution is there are five stakeholders. The government is only one of the stakeholders. They're the ones who agree, okay, we're going to adopt this ordinance as to how we provide housing. And I actually have a draft ordinance even in my book. And then they say, all right, we will go and we agree to change the zoning laws to set up your model. And we will, because to make the subsidy fund work, there have to be five donors. One of them is the government. And the government now gets billions of dollars from the federal government, be it the state government that then doles it down to the counties, the cities. And I'm saying if the government can give out hundreds of billions of dollars to farmers not to grow anything, just keep their land vacant, how about a few billion dollars to seed housing? Then in addition to the government fund, which goes under the housing subsidy fund in the housing subsidy solution, we also get developers to contribute a percentage, and landlords, as you know, in the LA area, you have what they call a millionaire's tax, where any right. percentage over a certain amount of millions, a percentage goes to the homeless fund. Well, excuse me, why not take a percentage, a small percentage of every transaction, sales transaction, and contribute it to the housing subsidy fund, for which the donor of that fund gets a tax credit. So it's not a donation, it's a win-win. So now you've got the developers and landlords putting in two or three percentage points of their profits, for which they get a break. So in addition to the government and the landlords, how about financial institutions, where banks that make most of their money on mortgages, construction loans, bonds, contribute a few basis points of their profit, again, for a tax credit. And you know what the amazing thing is, Mark? Both these groups, developers, landlords, and banks, have charities. They donate to just about every cause but housing. Animals, education, why not to housing?
And
as
they
well.
Don't, other than talk show hosts, they don't. And I know that in Washington, D.C., I think it's almost $200 million a certain house is being, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Well, they needed a larger dining room.
Yes, exactly. Well, you know, I'd like a bigger dining room too, but that would mean I'd have to have bigger, you know, parties. I don't get that one at all, and that's just going right into our pockets. Apparently, they discovered last week not being paid for by private people. Our guest is Peter G. DeCrassel. He's the author of Custom Made, M-A-I-D. I'd like one of those too. Housing, and we're talking about the housing issue. It's not only affecting us here in the U.S., but it is a worldwide problem. All right, we're going to take a time out. When we come back, we'll continue this, and I want to talk a little bit about rent control with Peter. Don't go away. Visit us at latenighthelp.com. We'll have a pretty picture of Peter's face up there and copies of his books and all kinds of information. He's got a great smile. All right, don't go away as Late Night Health continues.
You're listening to Late Night Health with Mark Allen. The show continues in a moment.
Hi, my name is Karen Howard, and I wear a lot of hats. I'm CEO of Organic and Natural Health, but here's what I'm going to talk to you about today. There's a new podcast out there that you can't really miss. It's called Women Having Conversations. It's at womenhavingconversations.com. And we talk about it all, ladies and gentlemen. So tune in. You'll hear about things like vaginal dryness or raising kids, or do I date when I'm in my 50s, 60s, and 70s? It's a lot of fun. Come and visit.
Hi, my name is Ursine Evans, and I'm the formulator of Pearsonay All Natural Hair and Skincare Products. Did you know that it only takes 26 seconds for chemicals to penetrate into your body? I created an incredible line of energetic products, non-toxin, that protects the skin. Check us out on our website, all one word, ilovepearsonay.com. ilovepearsonay.com.
Now you're part of the growing target of baby boomers we're serving. Hi, I'm Daryl Wayne, producer of Late Night Health, inviting you to join the Late Night Health family. If you have any business targeting the growing boomer market, Late Night Health is the ideal advertising vehicle for you. From vitamins to insurance, alternative health to Western-style medicine, Late Night Health caters to the growing population of those over 40 years old. This vibrant demographic has expendable income to fight aging, purchase travel, take care of aging parents, or just have fun. Find out about the advertising opportunities with Late Night Health. Call us at 805-391-0308. That's 805-391-0308, or email us at info@latenighthealth.com. That's info@latenighthealth.com. Join Late Night Health as we empower people to take charge of their own health care. Call now at 805-391-0308. That's 805-391-0308.
Hello, this is Kukua from Kukua Fitness in Africa with Us Travels. I tell you what, if you love to move your boomsy, you want to work out, and you want to do it in the comfort of your home, well, hey, I've got this for you. We have an app. It's on your phone. You can also get it on your TV, and it's called KukuaFitness.com. You are going to be dancing to African music from all over the continent of Africa. And by the way, did you know that you could also actually travel with us, AfricaWithUs.com, and go to any of the 54 countries in the continent of Africa and experience the best time of your life. So don't forget, either you want to move your pumsi or you want to take a awesome trip to Africa. I got your back.
Late Night Health continues. I'm Mark Allen. Our guest is the author of Custom Made Housing, published by Cal Books. Peter G. DeCrassel. And we're going to continue with Peter, by the way, in another 10, 12 minutes. We'll be talking to him about Palestine and what to do in the Middle East. Peter, let's talk about, rent control. I had an assistant who lived in Santa Monica, probably, well, let's just say more than 5 years ago. And she paid $200 or less a month under rent control. Now, honestly, I was at the apartment once or twice. It was somewhat of a dump. There was no work done to improve the building. I have a nephew who has an apartment under rent control in New York City, and he's paying well under market rates right now, but he doesn't make a whole bunch of money. And it's in a pretty good neighborhood. Not bad. Isn't rent control a good thing, or is it a bad thing like you indicated?
Rent control is great for those that live in a rent control apartment, but it is not good for anyone else. And actually, the illustrator of my book, Mark Caparosa, when he was preparing the illustration for my chapter on rent control and why rent control doesn't work, he happens to live in a rent control apartment in New York. and he says to me, "Peter, what do you mean rent control is no good? Midge married me because of my rent control apartment."
Yeah, I get that.
So yeah, it's great for those that get into one. It's bad for the landlords and it's bad for everybody else. So if you're in a community, the object of any government in a community is to do what's best for most of the people, for the majority of the people, not the minority. And unfortunately, it's a minority that benefits from rent control apartments. It's not the majority. And in a democracy and a capitalist democracy that we exist in and live in the U.S., we have to look at how to best provide housing for the masses, everyone, whether they're buyers, renters or homeless.
But at the same time, we've got non-rent-controlled apartments. And we hear horror stories about slum landlords. There have been documentaries. There have even been movies about this. I mean, if I woke up and felt a rat crawling over my leg, you'd hear me scream, even if you were back in Hong Kong. I don't like rats. I don't, if we have a spider here, my wife has to kill it. I don't want to be near these things. And I have a deal. They can do whatever they want outside. Inside,
right.
That's my deal, right? I think it's a good deal. It doesn't work, but that's what I'd like. So what do we do? I mean, rent control does provide, at least to some people, affordable housing, which is what you're advocating.
Correct. But it's providing affordable housing that goes against all the premises of what Housing Subsidy Solution provides. It does not provide a reasonable return to the investor, and it does not allow for a community to pool the resources of government, developers, landlords, financial institutions, charities, and yes, even religious institutions that have to donate, because all five of them are the stakeholders I advocate for the housing subsidy solution. All religious houses of worship have a tax-exempt status. One of the requirements is that they provide housing for the needy. Some do. Most, unfortunately, don't. And that is what has to change. And so what I advocate is that all houses of worship contribute up to, and I emphasize the words up to, 50% of the donations they receive should go to housing. Now, of course, a sole, you know, pastor or a small community church that doesn't have big money doesn't contribute anything. But any of the major religious organizations, be they Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, have billions of dollars that they raise. Why can't they contribute some of that to the housing subsidy fund I propose?
And, you know,
they should.
I have to say, if you remember The Bishop's Wife, the movie.
Correct.
Right? Okay. He wanted to build a huge edifice, which he thought would be, you know, the house of God.
Right.
There is a number of churches in downtown L.A. that I've always thought, instead of building those, why couldn't they have built housing for the homeless?
Exactly.
Right? It just
That's exactly what I, right on.
Right. It just doesn't make, it didn't make sense to me to have, you know, these huge monoliths that 2,000 people can sit in, and a deacon, a priest, a rabbi, I mean, a Muslim clergy, Buddhist, you know, everybody. You know, I'm all inclusive here. I think that would have been more godlike, if you will, than building the churches. And obviously, I think you agree.
I agree 1,000%. And I actually point out that that is what government should be requiring these religious institutions to do as part of my housing subsidy solution. They have to be one of the stakeholders, one of the donors, and up to 50% of their donations go to housing.
The word subsidy is something that I think at least one of the major political parties would not like. What do you think?
Unfortunately, the word subsidy has got a bad rap, because when you think about it, what is the difference between a mortgage and subsidy? A mortgage is a subsidy too. You're basically being subsidized, and then you have to pay back. And that is what the housing subsidy solution provides, is that, yes, your balance of the payment for your rent or mortgage over 25% may be paid by this fund, the housing subsidy fund, but as you're still going to be making monthly payments. It's not free. It's going to be whatever the market rate is. It's just that because you can't get money from a bank and you can't get money from the government, which is the crisis we are facing today, what I am proposing is, here is a solution as to how you get the money to buy or rent the house you need, because in due course, real estate, as you know, Mark, goes up in value. And most young couples, you know, from our generation,
right,
buying the first house is just a step on the housing ladder. They then, historically, young couples or home buyers move upscale every 5 to 10 years. Whenever they move up, that house has an increased value. The new people moving in now benefit because the former subsidy was paid off, just like a mortgage would be paid off. So rather than calling it a mortgage, it's a subsidy. But again, it's all about political spin as to why a party may not like it, which is why I asked the question, is it a mortgage subsidy that gets paid back? And I'm proposing the subsidies that Housing Subsidy Solution has get paid back. They're not a freebie. It's not a giveaway. It's compassionate capitalism. I do not believe in communism. I do not believe in socialism because those models have failed. They don't work.
I can't wait to read your book on healthcare.
The same model would apply, by the way. That's on my bucket list of books to write.
Well, you got plenty of, you know, you're going to be here for another 40, 50 years. So,
from your mouth to God's ears.
I love that. All right, we're going to take a timeout. And then when we come back, we're switching gears. Peter was born in Lebanon, in Palestine. So
I was conceived in Palestine and born in London.
Oh, okay. Got it. And that's kind of like my dad was conceived, I think, in Argentina, but born in New York.
Right.
The gestation period in both of those cases, I need to do some math. Anyway, what we're going to do, we're going to take some time out, and then we'll come back and spend some more time with Peter G. DeCrassel and his other book, which is, I want to get this made. Where is the name of the book? What is the name of the book on Palestine? Oh, here
Estimate,
we go. Go ahead.
Estimate Palestine for New World Disorder, the Two-State Solution.
Excellent. Okay. We may have some disagreement here. We may agree. We'll see as Late Night Health continues. Be sure to join us at latenighthealth.com. That's latenighthealth.com.
You're listening to Late Night Health with Mark Allen. The show continues in a moment.
Hi, my name is Karen Howard, and I wear a lot of hats. I'm CEO of Organic and Natural Health, but here's what I'm going to talk to you about today. There's a new podcast out there that you can't really miss. It's called Women Having Conversations. It's at womenhavingconversations.com. And we talk about it all, ladies and gentlemen. So tune in. You'll hear about things like vaginal dryness or raising kids or do I date when I'm in my 50s, 60s, and 70s? It's a lot of fun. Come and visit.
Hi, my name is Ursine Evans, and I'm the formulator of Pearsonay All Natural Hair and Skincare Products. Did you know that it only takes 26 seconds for chemicals to penetrate into your body? I created an incredible line of energetic products, non-toxin, that protects the skin. Check us out on our website. All one word, ilovepearsonay.com. ilovepearsonay.com.
Now you're part of the growing target of baby boomers we're serving. Hi, I'm Daryl Wayne, producer of Late Night Health, inviting you to join the Late Night Health family. If you have any business targeting the growing boomer market, Late Night Health is the ideal advertising vehicle for you. From vitamins to insurance, alternative health to Western-style medicine, Late Night Health caters to the growing population of those over 40 years old. This vibrant demographic has expendable income to fight aging, purchase travel, take care of aging parents, or just have fun. Find out about the advertising opportunities with Late Night Health. Call us at 805-391-0308. That's 805-391-0308 or email us at info@latenighthealth.com. That's info@latenighthealth.com. Join Late Night Health as we empower people to take charge of their own health care. Call now at 805-391-0308. That's 805-391-0308.
Hello, this is Kukua from Kukua Fitness and Africa with Us Travels. I tell you what, if you love to move your boomsi, you want to work out, and you want to do it in the comfort of your home, well, hey, I've got this for you. We have an app. It's on your phone. You can also get it on your TV, and it's called KukuaFitness.com. You are going to be dancing to African music from all over the continent of Africa. And by the way, did you know that you could also actually travel with us, AfricaWithUs.com, and go to any of the 54 countries in the continent of Africa and experience the best time of your life. So don't forget, either you want to move your pumsi or you want to take an awesome trip to Africa, I got your back.
Late Night Health continues. I have a feeling that Peter G. DeCrasso and I would really be, have, you know, if he lived in Thousand Oaks, we'd be hitting a bar together at least once a week.
I agree.
You know, I just, good feelings here. All right, we're going to talk about Palestine. You have a book, and I've got it here. It's this is such a hard and difficult situation. I don't know that there is a solution. Over the years, well, 1948, Israel was created, and everybody knows that I'm Jewish. I'm not overly religious. I'm more spiritual, but I do believe in Israel. I don't believe that Israel has apartheid, because I have been there. I interviewed some Arab residents. They don't want to go and be part of an Arab country. They want to stay as Israelis. They've served in the service. They're voted into the Knesset, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know if there's a solution. I have said for at least 30 years, let's have a Palestinian country. We can do that. How do we do that, Peter? How do we make peace? These people have lived together for thousands and thousands of years. And it is my belief that leaders in some of the in the Middle East just kind of goad the people without any money into doing horrendous things.
I agree. Let me give you. First of all, my opinion, I agree with you 1,000% that Israel has every right to exist where it is today, and a Palestinian state cannot replace it, and there is no room for a Palestinian state in Gaza or the West Bank. That is a reality that the last 70 years have shown. You just go from war to war to war. So what is the solution? What I point out in my book is that Palestine has never been a country. Palestine historically has always been a province over the thousands of years, and its capital would move either from Jerusalem to Damascus or Caesarea, depending on who was ruling. Everybody in that region, from Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Syria, Iraq, Jordan, Lebanon, southern Turkey, they were all Palestinians. They were all part of Palestine. People forget that the history of that region, the oldest religion there is Jewish. It's the one and only one that is still there. The other religions that started there have all gone, whether it's the Zoroastrian, any of the Christian sects. There's no country there with them, and Islam is a latecomer. It only arrived in the 1600s. So that whole region was Palestina, as it used to be called, the province of Palestine. And then you go to World War I, and two, and the UN that artificially carved up these countries there. Let's not forget Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt, Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, Israel, were all part of Palestine. There was no such country as Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Syria,
and
Iraq.
And for 400 years, they were part of the Ottoman Empire.
Exactly. That was the Ottoman Empire that was carved up by the British and the French and the UN. And in their stupidity, which I point out, when the UN was formed, the people that decided how to carve up Palestine had zero experience in A, the Middle East. They were government bureaucrats sitting in offices in Washington and London and Paris. And they decided, let's carve up the area. They decided where Saudi Arabia is going to be, where Syria is going to be, where Jordan's going to be. And then they had actually carved out Palestine that was going to be the country to be split up between Palestinian Jews and Palestinian Arabs. But then they ran into a problem. During the Sykes-Picot Agreement during World War I, the British and French, or the British especially, had promised King Hussein or the Sharif Hussein of Mecca that if they supported the Allies against the Germans and the Turks, they would make his kids kings of basically Iraq and Syria. Well, there's only one problem. They had also cut an agreement with the French that the French would run Syria. So when they installed Abdullah as the king of Syria and Damascus, and then the French came along, they said, you've got no right to do that. They kicked him out. So now what do the British do? They look at Palestine and they cut it in two and created Transjordan so that they could put a, you know, good old Abdullah, give him a country to become king. So all of a sudden, what was going to be the two-state Arab, Palestinian and Jewish Palestinian, and I say Arab because the Arabs are both Christian and Muslim. Right. Not all Arab Palestinians are Muslim, that people forget. Many of them are still Christian. So all of a sudden, the territory that was going to be the country for the two is now cut in half. And Abdullah's installed as the king of Transjordan that became Jordan today. And now Israel and Palestinians have said, now carve up what's left. And okay, let's put, you know, Gaza and the West Bank in the middle of Israel will become a country. It's not going to work. It's not working. So what I am proposing is let's look at an alternative, which is still part of historic Palestine. Let's look at the northwest desert of Saudi Arabia. Let's look at the southern borders of Iraq and Syria, which are desert. Let's look at the eastern border of Jordan, which is desert. Make all that part of Palestine, and then go a little further south. You've got the Red Sea, Egypt, and Sinai, which is desert. Make that part of Palestine and give them access to a seaport so they have a harbor, and then also give them a little bit of a strip of the West Bank to Jerusalem, because yes, their capital has to be in Jerusalem. And now you have a country that is made up of historic Palestine that can be easily built with the most modern state-of-the-art infrastructure, with the so-called $72 billion being proposed to remove just the rubble in Gaza, never mind to rebuild it. And what's the point of rebuilding something when Hamas is still there, saying they're not going to disarm, and they still want to destroy Israel? Why would Israel agree to it?
And that's the problem. I think I like a lot of your plan. How does Jerusalem and Israel work? Does Israel, is it split?
No, it's, I actually, in my book, I have actually drawn a map of with an illustration of the proposed Palestine. And, you know, I can show it to you if I can just find it here. And it works because, Because you see, what all Israel has to do is give up a little bit of the land by the... I'm showing you here the map, if you can see it, just so that you see the...
I can see it, and you can look at the book, which is, by the way, The Two-State Solution, Custom-Made, M-A-I-D, Palestine for the New World Order. I think that's an interesting idea, but will Israel give up Jerusalem?
Well, it's not a matter of giving up Jerusalem. It's just they keep the majority of Jerusalem. It just gives the Palestinians access to Al-Aqsa Mosque, because Al-Aqsa Mosque is very important in Islam. So as long as it could be, you know, just a highway, a road with, you know, just minimal land across what is today the border of the West Bank and the rest of Israel to Jerusalem. But most of the country will be in what is today desert in northwest Saudi Arabia, south Syria, south Iraq, east Jordan, and the Sinai and the Red Sea. And you can start mapping out a country that could be state-of-the-art, take a desert and make it bloom.
And
just like Israel did.
We think alike. I was just going to say, just like Israel did. Our guest is the author of, and I'm going to read this again, The Two-State Solution, Custom-Made Palestine for the New World Disorder. We'll talk about Hamas when we come back. Take time out. Our guest, Peter G. DeCrassel, and my new drinking partner when he comes out to Thousand Oaks.
You got a deal.
You got it. But you have to pick up the bill.
That's all right. My pleasure.
Okay, got it. I'm Mark Allen. Join us at latenighthealth.com. That's latenighthealth.com. We'll be back just in a minute.
You're listening to Late Night Health with Mark Allen. The show continues in a moment.
Hi, my name is Karen Howard, and I wear a lot of hats. I'm CEO of Organic and Natural Health, but here's what I'm going to talk to you about today. There's a new podcast out there that you can't really miss. It's called Women Having Conversations. It's at womenhavingconversations.com. And we talk about it all, ladies and gentlemen. So tune in. You'll hear about things like vaginal dryness, or raising kids, or do I date when I'm in my 50s, 60s, and 70s? It's a lot of fun. Come and visit.
Hi, my name is Ursine Evans, and I'm the formulator of Pure Sine All Natural Hair and Skincare Products. Did you know that it only takes 26 seconds for chemicals to penetrate into your body? I created an incredible line of energetic products, non-toxin, that protects the skin. Check us out on our website, all one word, ilovepiercene.com. ilovepiercene.com.
Now you're part of the growing target of baby boomers we're serving. Hi, I'm Daryl Wayne, producer of Late Night Health, inviting you to join the Late Night Health family. If you have any business targeting the growing boomer market, Late Night Health is the ideal advertising vehicle for you. From vitamins to insurance, alternative health to Western-style medicine, Late Night Health caters to the growing population of those over 40 years old. This vibrant demographic has expendable income to fight aging, purchase travel, take care of aging parents, or just have fun. Find out about the advertising opportunities with Late Night Health. Call us at 805-391-0308. That's 805-391-0308, or email us at info@latenighthealth.com. That's info@latenighthealth.com. Join Late Night Health as we empower people to take charge of their own health care. Call now at 805-391-0308. That's 805-391-0308.
Hello, this is Kukua from Kukua Fitness and Africa with Us Travels. I tell you what, if you love to move your boomsie, you want to work out, and you want to do it in the comfort of your home, well, hey, I've got this for you. we have an app. It's on your phone. You can also get it on your TV. And it's called KukuaFitness.com. You are going to be dancing to African music from all over the continent of Africa. And by the way, did you know that you could also actually travel with us, AfricaWithUs.com, and go to any of the 54 countries in the continent of Africa and experience the best time of your life. So don't forget, either you want to move your pumsi or you want to take an awesome trip to Africa. I got your back.
Late Night Health continues. I'm Mark Allen. Our guest is Peter G. DeCrassel, and he's an attorney, went to Hastings Law School, which is one of the finest on the West Coast. I almost said East Coast. Can you believe that? Can I tell the story about the horse? You should tell the story.
Oh, of course.
You tell the story about the horse.
Yeah, this goes back to May of 1979 during the energy crisis gas crisis in the U.S. when the Arab countries decided to embargo the U.S. when it came to oil. And I was a practicing lawyer in Beverly Hills and lived in the Will Rogers guest house in Pacific Palisades and had a stable for 22 horses for my wife, kids, partner, and clients and friends. And I was driving my car it was a Friday evening from my office in Beverly Hills heading home. And I realized I was running out of gas, but the lines were around the block and there was no way I would be able to survive. So I got home, I called my partner, Jerry, and I said, "Hey, Jerry," he had his horse at my house. I said, "I don't know how I'm going to get to the office," which was in Beverly Hills, because right. I've got no gas in my car and I couldn't fill up. And we've got important meetings. So what I'm thinking is, how about we ride our horses to work? He goes, "You're nuts." I go, "Well, that's another issue." I said, let's have somebody research what the requirements are, because we have to go through several jurisdictions from Pacific Palisades. Because the old Will Rogers guest ranch, as you know, is right by Will Rogers State Park.
Right.
So I had to cross Sunset, Brooktree, go up to San Vicente. So I'm now going from LA City to Santa Monica, down San Vicente, into the federal property, along the railroad tracks, public utilities, then again, the public utility through the city of LA to Beverly Hills.
Wow.
And I figured all of those jurisdictions, of course, required a permit. And it was a weekend, so there was no way we were going to get that. So we decided that's the route we're going to take. We'll tie the horses to meters that were right by the railroad track behind La Scala back then on the railroad tracks in Beverly Drive, because my office was in Beverly Drive. So that's exactly what we decided to do. Come Monday morning, got our suits on, briefcases. He drove his car to my house. We both got on our horses, and off we went. And of course, when we stopped in gas stations, it was to give our horses water. Huh. Well, this was cell phone days. The media got wind of the idea. Next thing we know, we had reporters all over us following us, and it became the number one story in LA and all over the world. I was getting calls from people in Switzerland and Europe. "Peter, is that you on a horse? What's the matter with you?"
I love it.
So that's that was the story of the horse, how we got to work. And as long as we kept money in the meter, the cops left us alone. But what wasn't reported in that story was how a couple of Beverly Hills matrons complained because they couldn't park their cars because our horse occupied the meters.
Oh, is that funny?
And so the police came. You're going to love this part, Mark, because this never made the press. The gal who I had feeding the meter with money and the horses with water, making sure the poop landed on the railroad tracks and not in Beverly Hills, went to the phone booth in La Scala, called me and said, there's an officer here with a Volkswagen, and they want to take the horses. So I went up there. I said, what's the problem, officer? He says, you're in violation of section such and such. And so I have to arrest the horses. I said, sorry, officer. Section such and such says the horse, I'm not allowed to parade a horse in Beverly Hills without a permit. The horse is parked in a meter. There's money in the meter. So what is the violation? He says, let me call my supervisor. He calls the supervisor. He goes, you're technically correct, but I will be back here when you're ready to leave. And this was like right after, just during lunch, because the ladies were out to get to their lunch. I said, well, I'm going to be leaving at 4 o'clock. So meantime, I went back to the office and we let all the press know that I was being threatened with arrest and the horse being impounded when I left. So the press all showed up. And then, of course, the officer, you know, they questioned him, are you going to arrest him? So I alerted my gal. I said, look, I'm going to talk to the officer, have the press talk to him, take the reins off the meter, put it on the horse. I'm going to jump on the horse and go racing down the railroad track and get the hell out of Beverly Hills. So that's what I did. And I had another person wait for me at Century Park East in Santa Monica. If you recall, there was a great restaurant there, Jimmy's.
Oh, yeah.
And so I stopped the horse right on the intersection there, put the horse in the trailer, off it went, and I went into Jimmy's at the bar and sat and looked out, and there are the Beverly Hills cop cars racing down trying to find me. Meantime, the horse went another direction. So, and the story goes on, because the next day the Beverly Hills police chief wanted to talk to me.
I love it.
Anyway, it was fun.
The one of the problems that I see in the Middle East, because we are talking about, that was a fun story, is Hamas. You know, this is a group that October 7th of last year, you know, they did atrocities. And yet people throughout the world are blaming Israel. I don't get that. It doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't make sense to me either. But it makes sense if you understand social media and the algorithms and the amount of money that Iran and some of the other Muslim countries, namely Malaysia, spend on social media algorithms, basically promoting the fact that it is Israel that is committing the crimes and not Hamas, and kind of focusing on what happened post October 7, 2023 and the horrific massacres you talk about. But not only that, the fact that the reason so many civilians died is because Hamas embeds itself into the civilian community, builds its headquarters of missile launchers under hospitals, near hospitals, uses the civilians as human shields. And then what does the world expect is going to happen when Israel fires back to defend itself? Of course, innocents are going to be killed. But whose fault is it? And that's a conversation that has to be had that is not.
Were you raised as a Christian, Muslim, or non-religious?
My mother is Jewish. My father was Christian. And I was raised in Cyprus in a mixed Greek, Orthodox, Turkish, Muslim neighborhood because my dad was a reporter for the BBC covering the War of Independence of Cyprus from Britain. And my mother refused to live in a British camp for security reasons. And so we wound up living in a mixed neighborhood, Muslims, Greek Orthodox, had a Christian father, Jewish mother, and they basically said, you go figure it out because, you know, all religions preach the same: love, understanding, peaceful neighbors. So don't judge anyone by their religion. And that's the way I was raised. And that's why I accept and tolerate everyone as long as they're peaceful. I do not accept violence in any shape or form unless it is self-defense.
I love it. Would you say, as we wrap up, that Israel has been fighting instead of defending itself?
Absolutely. I mean, all you have to do is look at the history of the region, which I spell out in detail, going back, like I say, to Roman times, but then I bring it up to modern days, you know, from World War I, Lawrence of Arabia, the Ottoman Empire, the Arab revolt against the British, the War of Independence of both the Arabs and the Jews in Palestine, because both the Arabs and the Jews wanted to get rid of the British. So people should not forget that. It's just that the Arab-Palestinians went about it politically the wrong way and militarily the wrong way. Whereas the Jews lobbied London correctly and then fought correctly by working with the British rather than against them until they had to go against them once they solved the Arab problem. So political leadership is at fault here. I think the Israeli Zionists, or Weizmann, Ben-Gurion, were brilliant political tacticians, whereas the Arab Muftis were morons of the way they conducted themselves. I mean, all you have to do is just look, if you're an objective political analyst. And you know what gets me, Mark? Think about what just happened in the U.S., the last election in Michigan, where most Arab-Palestinians live in the U.S. They didn't vote for Kamala Harris because of Biden's policy, and they voted for Trump because they thought he would be better than Harris. They voted for a man who moved the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, imposed the Muslim ban, and then after the election, they go, yeah, we made a mistake. It's an example of how they constantly, historically, made the wrong political decisions that winds up getting them in a mess and keeps them in the mess they're in.
Peter, I've had such an exciting hour with you. Look forward to shaking your hand sometime. And
yeah, I'll give you a call when I get to LA, and we're definitely going to catch up on that drink.
I would love that. That would be
That's a promise on me.
You got it. Okay. I can't wait. Lascala.
It'll be in July. It'll be around mid July. I don't know. I'll let you know my next schedule when I'm heading that way.
Yeah, please do. We'll hold on, and I'll give you my number. Hey, everybody, thank you very much for tuning in. We're out of time. And as I say every week, have a good week. Have a healthy week, and have a healthy week. Go for that walk or do something. I know we broke our tradition of talking about health, but this is both topics today. We're talking about the health of people, you know. All right,
health of humanity.
I'm sorry. What was that?
The health of humanity.
Yeah, the health of humanity, absolutely.
The health of Palestinians, the health of anyone who needs a roof over their head.
Absolutely. Maybe we'll talk about food next time. Anyway, I'm Mark Allen. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.